Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are back with Dr. Marty Greer on our Veterinary Voice episodes. And this month, we are talking about really a very, very dangerous, not terribly uncommon disease process that happens with female dogs. So pyometria, Marty, yikes.
Yeah, it is really scary. It's one of the scariest things that I get phone calls from breeders with is that they're concerned that their dog might have a pyometra. Now, we kind of laugh at our practice because pyometra seems to have turned into a verb, a noun, and an adjective. So
my dog is pyoed, yeah.
Yes, it's a verb. My dog is pyoing, my dog has pyoed. You know, it is really not a verb, but people do use it in that context, and it's universally understood to be that which strikes the fear into breeders' hearts. As soon as they hear those words or start to think that that might be what's wrong with their intact female dog.
Absolutely. And this is time-sensitive, life-threatening.
It is both, yes. We were taught in veterinary school, never let the sun set on a pyometra. So it's a universal phrase that if you start the sentence, never let the sun set, any veterinarian will complete the sentence for you.
Interesting. Okay. Very good. And so give us a rundown. What's the symptoms? What is the actual, I know these answers, but what's the actual disease process? And what's the solution?
Well, the disease process is a combination of a hormonal and a bacterial disease. So it's not purely bacterial. It does require the hormonal influence of a uterus that's under progesterone influence, which means that sometime in the preceding, usually 4 to 6 weeks, but it can be as short as 2 weeks and it can be as long as 12 weeks, the intact female dog has been in heat. Now, this is a female dog that has her ovaries and her uterus, not a dog that's had an ovary-sparing spay, not a dog that's spayed, but only for intact female dogs. Most commonly, we see it in the age group of over age 9, but we can see it in dogs on their first heat cycle. I've treated some of those. I've treated some at age 16. So the age range is basically from the start of the first heat cycle until the dog can no longer survive. So it makes it difficult. It makes it challenging. You know, these are tough decisions for clients to have to make as we work through the veterinary diagnostics and treatment options.
Absolutely. I've had people do it. It's not fun. So pyometria is only after the bitch has been in season and usually relatively shortly after she's been in season.
Yes, while her uterus is still under progesterone influence. So it means her ovaries are still actively producing progesterone and she's got usually an elevated progesterone. It's usually above 5.
Okay.
It can sometimes be lower than that, but generally that's where we end up seeing it.
And then what are the symptoms? She's going to be lethargic. She's not going to want to eat. She's going to have a high fever, all of those kind of things.
Well, they are frequently lethargic, although I will see dogs that come bouncing in the front door looking completely normal with open pyometras. And I've seen dogs come in really, really sick. Now, contrary to what your thought process should be, they don't run fevers. They almost never have a fever. They will be lethargic. If they have an open pyometra, they're an easy diagnosis. That means the cervix is open, and you see purulent pus material pouring out of the vagina.
Right.
Sometimes it's bloody, sometimes it's more pussy, but it's
gross.
Kind of a nasty discharge. The sicker dogs are the ones with a closed cervix, so there's no vaginal discharge, and there's no flashing neon sign that says, I have a pyometra.
Right.
So it can be a more difficult diagnosis to make. It's made a lot easier now that we have ultrasound, because in my hands, ultrasound is really the diagnostic tool of choice. But it's hard to understand. It's really counterintuitive that you can have a uterus full of pus and a white cell count that's through the roof and you don't run a fever. And we talk about this frequently. When I go to the veterinary meetings, I keep saying to the people who are at the meetings that are smarter than me, so why don't they have fevers? And I get this universal kind of, I'm not really sure, except that we think that the uterus is a privileged location. So it will tolerate fetuses, foreign proteins, placentas, all the things that develop normally in a uterus. So if it's immunologically tolerant to that, it's probably also immunologically tolerant to a gallon of pus.
Wow.
So It's hard to understand it. I've gotten into a lot of discussions with people. I rarely will see a fever. If they have a fever, it usually means that they have peritonitis because of the pyometra. So that means pus is leaking out of the oviducts or through the uterine wall, and it's now causing an infection inside the abdominal cavity. So those are the sickest dogs. Those are the ones that really end up having to go to surgery. There is medical management for both open and closed cervix pyometras, and we can discuss each of those individually. But the dogs that run fevers and that are not doing well are generally surgical candidates. Now, that's the other part of the discussion, is which dogs are okay to manage medically, which dogs need to be managed surgically.
Right.
So we can kind of break that down as we go through this discussion.
Right. Okay. Excellent. So I guess start with the easy one. Start with an open pile where you got green yucky coming out the hoochie and hello.
Yeah. And it smells terrible. And it looks
yes,
terrible.
Horrible.
And frequently the females have been licking it up and trying to keep it clean. And so, it's just generally pretty disgusting. But it is an easy air diagnosis because you've got this clear evidence that there's something going on. And, you know, most owners are aware of when their dog was in heat last, but not always. Sometimes it's not the owner that comes in with the dog, so mm-hmm. It can sometimes be a little bit confusing. But if they come in with a vaginal discharge that's unappealing, and it's clearly vaginal, it's not coming from the anal sac or something mm-hmm. else, then I'll typically want to do a good physical exam on them, get some blood work on them, and do an ultrasound. And ultrasounds really are the easiest way to make a diagnosis. On X-ray, you can get the impression that there's something not quite right going in the abdomen, but the intestines and the uterus can look a great deal alike on an X-ray. In fact, right. The bladder can as well. But once you get the probe on the ultrasound, it makes it really clear because you can see great big pockets of fluid that are clearly not bladders because dogs only come with one bladder. So when you see multiple organs that look like bladders, then you have a pretty good handle on the fact that this dog has a pyometra. If you have a really small uterus or if you have too much gas in the abdomen, things like that, it can be a little bit difficult. But generally, it's a pretty straightforward diagnosis.
And so once you've diagnosed it, it's an open pyo. What's our plan from there?
Well, then we go down one of two paths. We can go down the medical management path, meaning that you can keep her intact. And there are two reasons to do that. One would be if you have a dog that has a breeding future and she's valuable to your breeding program. The other is if you have a dog that's frankly just too sick to go to surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard it said more than once that you may see a dog that's too sick for surgery but not too sick for medical management. So there are some dogs that are just so high risk to put under anesthesia because they're so sick that you don't want to try to take them to surgery. The risks of anesthesia and the risk of the surgical procedure itself can be just too great. So those dogs may be a candidate for medical management. So medical management basically consists of a long course of antibiotics and an appropriate prostaglandin. So the antibiotic is clearly to clear the infection, and the prostaglandin does two things. One is it helps to contract the uterus so that it will help to expel the material that's inside the uterus that isn't supposed to be there, the pus. And the other is that it lyses the corpus luteum on the ovary, which means that it tells the ovary to stop making progesterone, the progesterone drops, and then the uterus will start to evacuate both hormonally and physically by uterine contractions. So it's sort of a two-prong approach that we get from prostaglandins. And then there's additional treatment based on each individual's needs. We may have her on either IV fluids or subcutaneous fluids, depending on how sick she is. We may have her on medication like Serenia or Reglan to manage the vomiting, because there is side effect of vomiting from prostaglandins. Although we are using much, much, much lower doses of prostaglandins these days than we did when I first started treating these 20 years ago, so they're not as sick. There isn't as much vomiting associated with it. Sometimes we have to work hard to get the cervix to open up. Most of the time, once we start medications, if the cervix hasn't opened, I can almost set my watch to 24 hours. I can go back and stand behind the female at about 24 hours from the time we gave the first injection of prostaglandin, and this gush of fluid starts, and it's like a little cheer goes up in the hospital. You know, it's a pretty bad place when you get excited about pus drain. But it's the reality of, okay, great, the cervix is now
open.
Yeah, I know. A little tear goes up. So we'll sometimes give misoprostol into the cervical region to try and soften the cervix and allow it to open up more easily. And there is a procedure called the TECT procedure. It's TECT. And that's where we use our endoscope, the same scope that we use to do transcervical inseminations. Mm. We'll put that up into the uterus and flush the uterus with saline to help liquefy that purulent material in the uterus and get it to flush out more easily. So there's a couple of different things that we can do just depending on the dog. Now, if she comes in with the pyometra, It's an open cervix. She's bouncing around. She feels great. She's happy. Everything is wonderful. Those are really much easier to treat than the sicker dogs. But very sick dogs can be managed very, very well as well. So if you have a committed owner and a committed staff, it can work out to be a really good outcome for these dogs.
Okay, so you come in with a very sick dog that you can't identify because it's a closed bio. Same basic diagnostic process, yes?
Okay, so we start off with the same basic diagnostics, whether it's an open or a closed pyometra, if we're not sure what we've got going on. So we'll start with an ultrasound, and we'll do a CBC chemistry panel. So the CBC is the complete blood count. That'll tell us that they have an elevated white blood cell count, usually over 30,000, and usually with a left shift. Left shift means that there's a lot of baby white blood cells that are in the circulation because they're all trying to fight the infection that's in the uterus. Their red blood cell count, platelet count are usually normal. And their chemistry panel frequently is normal. Every now and then you'll have one with an elevated BUN and creatinine, which tells you that there's some kidney involvement, because sometimes the bacterial toxins that are produced in the uterus can affect the kidneys. Most of the time their chemistry panels are pretty normal. Symptoms of these dogs that have a closed pyometra are lethargy, like we talked about. Many of them are vomiting, and most of them are drinking buckets and buckets of water. And it's because those toxins in the uterus that are being produced, her little kidneys are trying to flush them out, so she's just chugging down the water trying to keep her kidneys healthy. So one of the most classic symptoms that you'll hear a client call about is, I have an intact female dog, she's not feeling well, and she's drinking and drinking and drinking. So what does the owner think she might have? Well, they might think of it's pyometra, but they might also be worried about diabetes, or they might be worried about kidney failure. So those are the things that can be a little bit confounding when you're trying to determine what's going on, especially if you're at a hospital that doesn't have ultrasound.
Wow. Yeah, that is really good information. I had not heard that particular piece before. And so treating the closed pyometra, you talked before about using the scope and trying to soften the cervix. Is this the same type of procedure to get that, use the prostaglandins, get that cervix to open up?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. So we'll usually have to work a little bit harder with the closed cervix pyometra, but I have absolutely treated many closed cervix pyometras very successfully. And the whole point of treating them is either, well, like I said, if they're too sick to go to surgery, that you want to, of course, keep the dog alive. But many people want to do this medically because they have a female that's a valuable breeding dog. They want to keep her in their gene pool, and she's important to them. So we'll manage these so that they can subsequently go on to have litters. And I can tell you, I have dozens and dozens of patients that have come to us with pyometras and have been so successfully treated that they have had not one litter, but multiple litters after the pyometra. Now, the other thing that we hear besides don't let the sun set on a pyometra is you need to breed her on every single heat cycle after that pyometra, because she's at risk of developing another pyo.
Right.
So we do encourage people to get their ducks in a row and make sure that when she comes back into heat the next time, that you have a stud dog lined up, that you're ready to go, and you're in a position that you can breed that female and get a litter of puppies out of her. And frequently they will have a shorter cycle than the typical time between heat cycles because of the prostaglandin use. So they may cycle at 4 or 4.5 months instead of the usual 6 months. I'm talking to my clients right at that diagnostic time of, you need to know who your stud dog is, get him lined up, make sure he's not going to be at Westminster, make sure he's not hiking in the mountains in Montana where you can't get to them because they don't have cell phone service. You know, please, please, please get it ready. And I encourage them to try to avoid the use of frozen semen on that breeding because her uterus may not be at the peak of health, and we want to give her the best opportunity to get pregnant again or to get pregnant the first time. So we will want to have as fresh a semen as we can, so either fresh natural breeding, fresh TCI, or fresh chilled, so that we have our most primo opportunity to get this little gal pregnant.
Right. And okay, so we breed her once or twice or however many times we wanted to breed her again. Do we then spay her, correct? Or if you have an intact female that you're not going to breed, then you spay her in the first case? Is that how we'd manage that?
Well, yeah, but that of course gets into a whole nother topic of what's the appropriate age to remove her ovaries.
Right.
So, you know, this is a little off topic, but you can take a normal regular dog and do an ovary sparing spay and take out her uterus. So she still has hormonal influences but won't have the risk of a pyometra. And as long as that's done correctly by a veterinarian that knows what they're doing and they take the entire uterus all the way down to the cervix, you won't end up with a pyometra. But yes, once you're done with a female dog, in her breeding career is over, our recommendation is that you still go ahead and spay them whether you take the ovaries or don't take the ovaries. And that's a decision that you and your veterinarian can have a conversation about. but approximately 25% of all female dogs that are intact over the age of 8 end up with a pyometra. So it is a very common condition. It is not rare in any stretch of the imagination. It may be rare in a practice that only sees spayed females, but in a practice that sees any number of intact female dogs, we see a lot of pyos. It's not unusual for us to see between 1 and 3 pyometras a week in our practice.
Wow. Okay. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
How much is that doggy in the window?
Okay, crew. I hear it pretty much every day now. I love pure dog talk. And that makes my heart happy, because I love doing it. I started hosting Pure Dog Talk as a way to reach out to members of our community with education and resources to enable you to succeed and move forward in your goals and ambitions. And your response has been literally overwhelming. The podcast has been downloaded well over 250,000 times to date. That's incredible. All of this information is free to exhibitors around the world at the touch of a button. But here's the reality check. Money really does make the world go round, guys. So I created a special patrons group. This funding source helps cover the expenses of audio editing and website hosting and technology and like that. Patrons keep Pure Dog Talk's fountain of knowledge flowing freely. And like the NPR of dogdom, our patrons support Pure Dog Talk with monthly gifts. We even offer advertising and sponsorship opportunities that you guys may not have known about. So drop me a note, laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll let you know how you can help share the love. And so we talked earlier, the comment was, don't let the sun set on a pyometra, and this is a very, very life-threatening disease. Give us the... okay, you didn't notice it, you weren't paying attention, you were away from home. What kind of time frame are we talking about? Like, you know, bloat, you've got an hour. What are we talking about with pyo?
Most of the time you have more than an hour. I will tell you that there are rare occasions that we see such a severe bacterial infection and so severe toxins. About 10% of the dogs that have pyometras are that sick that they can literally die overnight. Fortunately, that's a small number of dogs. And normally, if you can get them started on an antibiotic, for instance, if you go to the emergency clinic and it's 10 o'clock at night and your regular clinic is closed and the emergency clinic says, well, we don't treat pyometras here medically, you're going to have to spay her. If they can give you fluids and they can get her started on antibiotics and some supportive care, you can almost always make it till the next morning and get her in for a spay. Now, a lot of the emergency clinics will scare you, and it's their job to make sure that they tell you all the risks and benefits of what you're probably trying to do. But I haven't seen very many dogs that have died in a short period of time. So it's important that you don't fail to pay attention to this, but if you get them started on antibiotics, get some supportive care, and get an appointment the following morning with your regular clinic, if they're comfortable managing it. If they're not, that you find a veterinary clinic that does a lot of canine reproduction and is interested in doing it, you generally will have time to get them in and get them managed. And like I said, there are absolutely dogs too sick to go to surgery. So sometimes it's not the worst idea in the world is to just ask for fluids, whether it's IV or sub-Q, and that you get some supportive care, get some antibiotics. And my antibiotic of choice is usually Clavamox. Every now and then.
I was just going to ask you.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes Baytril is a better choice, but most of the time Clavamox or the injectable form of that, which is Unicin, is quite a good antibiotic choice. If we do manage them medically, they're on the antibiotic for 4 weeks after the diagnosis.
Wow.
We don't mess around with this stuff. They have to be on it for an extended period of time. The uterine wall at that point is thickened and it's angry and it doesn't respond as well to an antibiotic for a short course as we would perhaps like it to be. So we have to be pretty interested in going with a long-term antibiotic. So it generally costs as much to do a medical managed pyometra as it costs to do a surgically managed, and it's certainly, of course, more than the cost of a routine spay. So it's always best to spay her when you're done breeding her, but if you have a dog that's valuable and this happens to you, you need to know that there are these alternative choices.
There are options.
Yeah. And I've actually had one veterinary clinic threaten a client for not treating their dog immediately with surgery. And it was one of those bouncy dogs. She was groomed up, ready for the show. They took her out of the crate. She came bouncing out of the crate, ready to show, didn't look at all sick, and gosh.
Ew.
And it was a Samoyed, so it was pretty obvious there was a, you know, problem. And so she went into the ring with her other dogs. Her husband and her daughter took the dog to the local emergency clinic, and they threatened her that they were going to report her if she didn't have the dog and go to surgery that day yet. So I intervened on that one, called them, and this dog never missed a beat, never missed a meal, never got sick. You know, she just blew through treatment, did great, went on to have subsequent litters. So it can be managed really well, but you have to know your stuff if you're going to go toe-to-toe with an emergency veterinarian. You have to know. And the lectures they go to are different than the lectures the people that do reproduction go to. They go to the lectures that say dogs with pyometris die unless you spay them. And I go to the lectures that say dogs that have pyometris when they're managed medically have puppies.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, we're coming at it from two completely different approaches, and they're both right to a certain extent. So that's where you have to go in with the information that you need and the backup and the backbone to say, I want antibiotics, I want fluids, I want my dog to be managed medically. So please help me with this so that I can go take care of it tomorrow at my regular clinic that will help me with this.
That is really great advice. And so just a little segue, I mean, this is, we're not really on this topic, but I think it's probably a good thing to talk just a little bit about, made me think of it, younger puppies that you see, like a vaginitis or a little bladder infection. I thought of it because it just happened. My little white wire hair pointer puppy with her little green stringy gookie coming out of her. I'm like, what is this? What are you doing to me here?
And that's just puppy vaginitis. It's not any different than the green stuff that you see coming out of the prepuce of the young male dog.
Right.
It's just the effect of the immune system trying to figure out the world and trying to get the right flora established for the bacteria in the vagina or in the prepuce. It's really, really common. Unless the dog has signs of a urinary tract infection with urgency, frequency to urinate, those kinds of things, I don't treat those with antibiotics.
Mm.
I don't douche them. I don't do antibiotics. What I do is a four-day course of Premarin, which is the hormone that people take, women take for hormone replacement therapy. I do it twice a week for a total of four doses. And what that does is it helps to mature the epithelial lining of the vagina so that that vaginitis goes away. Human little girls have it. They put them in little white cotton underwear. You don't spay your little daughters, you know. But we do spay our dogs. And it just blows my mind that veterinarians think that the best way to fix this is to spay them because, of course, it's completely the opposite. The best way to fix it is to let them have a heat cycle and let hormones do what we were given hormones to do, and that's create sexual maturity, going through puberty and allowing that vaginal epithelium to mature. And then it goes away. They never have another problem with it.
I'm speechless. There are people out there paying. Speechless. Spaying little baby puppy bitches over a puppy vaginitis?
Every day.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I know. I would like to be speechless too, but unfortunately.
Literally, I'm speechless.
I need to speak up because I have to stop people from, you know, thinking that that's the best treatment option.
Oh,
and it really
gosh.
Isn't. So, yeah. But it happens all the time. And, you know, well-meaning clients follow the advice of their veterinarians. And well-meaning veterinarians make this recommendation because they just don't see enough intact dogs in their practice to really understand the differences in what we see. So,
wow.
You know, I work in a practice that I think probably 75% of our dogs are intact.
Sure.
And that's pretty unique because most practices are somewhere probably around 1% of their dogs being intact, male and female.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's a big difference.
Wow.
And I've done this for 36 years.
Right.
So I've had the chance to see lots and lots and lots and lots of little sexual organs and know what works and what doesn't work. And if you're newly out of school or you're in a practice that just doesn't have those kinds of clients, it is going to change how you approach and how you look at treatment options.
Wow. Okay. Well, that just blew my mind.
Well,
okay.
I'm glad I can be of help.
Excellent, excellent. That's just ratchet up my Sunday.
I have a list of the most commonly affected dogs with pyometra.
Oh, interesting. Yes, absolutely. Tell me about that.
Okay. So the dogs that we see most commonly affected by pyometra, and most people don't think of this as being a genetic disease, but I think we have to look at this a little bit differently.
Interesting.
Because there's a great article that was written in 2012 and presented at the International Symposium for Canine and Feline Reproduction. But if you do Google Scholar, you can find this article without being a veterinarian. And it's called Breed Variations in the Incidence of Pyometra and Mammary Tumors in Swedish Dogs. Now, the reason it's Swedish dogs is because most of their dogs, about 90% of their dogs, have health insurance. Mm-hmm. So they're able to collect data on dogs that we don't have. And, of course, Banfield in the U.S. has a lot of data, but most of their dogs are spayed and neutered. So I just want to go through the list of which dogs are most commonly affected. And the number one dog on the list is the Bernese Mountain Dog.
Weird.
And up to 46% of Bernese Mountain Dogs that are not spayed will end up with a pyometra. So it's 46% of Berners. Next on the list is Great Dane, and then Leonberger, Rottweiler, Irish Wolfhound, American Staffordshire Terrier, and then Kay's Hound. So those are the top breeds that we see with pyometras. And I think it's kind of interesting when you look at Bernese Mountain Dogs, Great Danes, Leonbergers, Rottweilers, and Irish Wolfhounds, the top five.
Right.
They're all giant breed dogs that came down from that mysterious mastiff-type dog that everybody describes in
the Molosser. You know,
the heritage of their dogs. Yeah, and so I think somewhere along the way there was probably a dog or a group of dogs that were affected by pyometras, and it's just carried down through these giant breed dogs. So it's important, especially if you have a dog in one of those breeds, that you are especially attentive to her 4 to 6 weeks after her heat cycle, or that you are especially attentive to thinking about spaying her once her breeding career is over. And we used to say, let her have a heat cycle, you know, wait until she's two, breed her, then take one off, breed her, then take one off, breed her, then take one off. And now the general recommendation by people that do a lot of canine reproduction is to breed back-to-back and get all your litters out of her in a short period of time. And then when she's 4, 5, 6, whatever you're doing and whenever she's done with her breeding career, that you do spay her. Especially if you have a dog in that group of giant breed dogs, I would really encourage you to think about that.
Amazing. That is very, very interesting information that I had never heard. So,
yeah, it's a great article and easily accessed if you Google it.
We'll be able to find a link and put that on the show notes for people to track down.
Great.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Marty. We really appreciate your time, and we will talk to you next month on, I think, another very interesting and very exciting topic.
Yes, ma'am.
Excellent. Thank you.
The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.